Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Straight at 107, I'm Cheryl Castro, 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's News and Talk.
This is 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's News and Talk. And this is Atlanta, the food, the wine, the entertainment, the lifestyle. This is Belinda Skelton's Atlanta Living.
Brought to you by Marietta Plastic Surgery.
Welcome to Atlanta Living. I'm your host, Belinda Skelton. Well, Eater Atlanta says Redbird is one of the hottest restaurants in Atlanta right now. And Atlanta Magazine awarded it Best Food and Drink. So you're wondering why you're not there? We're going to tell you why you should be. I have chef and owner Zeb Stevenson in the studio with me. And Zeb, thank you so much for taking time out of your Saturday to join us in the studio.
Absolutely.
And you were at Watershed.
That's correct.
And made your way over to open Redbird. So tell us how that transition worked.
Sure. I was the chef at Watershed for about 4 years before Redbird opened. And that's when I met my now business partner, Ross Jones. And Ross owned Watershed for 20 years. She and Emily Sellers from Indigo Girls started Watershed. Ross and I, boy, we just click. We really do. And we developed a great relationship, and we started talking probably about 2 years ago about opening another restaurant. And so we really started going down that road, and Ross ended up selling Watershed so that her and I could go into business on Redbird, and it has just been a whirlwind of excitement ever since.
Speaking of getting along and very compatible, my foodie correspondent David Danzig is also in the studio with me.
Yep.
And David, you were one of the first people that told me about Redbird.
Yeah.
And you're always my lifeline to new restaurants, and it doesn't disappoint.
No, I well, the buzz had been, there had been this kind of long-standing question when Annie Quattrano vacated the space she formerly housed her wonderful restaurant, Bacchanalia, and moved it about a mile away. So this space that had become iconic for Bacchanalia was sat vacant. And a lot of the food nerds like me were going, okay, what's going in there? What's next? What's next? So then there was this buzz. And then when Ross Jones, I heard Ross and Zeb were going to take over. Then the excitement started to build. And sure enough, you guys have completely redesigned the space.
Absolutely.
I don't even know when I'm in there that I formerly had these epic meals at Bacchanalia. Feels totally different, totally lightened it up. Tons of windows.
It's huge,
just a
windows.
Beautiful space now.
The space itself, when we got it, was basically just a big empty box with big windows. And so,
perfect. Great bug structure.
Yeah. Didn't feel like there was a lot of interference needed there. And I love the way that the room was just washed in light. And I felt like if we just leave this thing open, a lot of energy will translate through and we can create this experience that feels very welcoming, that feels fun and lively and doesn't feel stuffy and doesn't feel too fancy. So we just went for it like that.
So you wanted to see every patron diner in the restaurant. Now, why is that?
It's important to me that I feel connected to the people who are eating.
You want
to
see if I have Kel in my tea?
And I'm certainly not above coming in and letting you know. That's the helpful thing to do. But I want to feel connected to the people who eat in my restaurant. And having worked in kitchens that were in the back, that were closed off, I always felt disconnected. And that's a real bummer because cooking and feeding people is a very, it's a very cool relationship to have with people. You're doing something that requires a lot of trust, and mm-hmm. there's an energy sure. about it that's very yeah. important.
Is it kind of like a DJ? Like, you know how a good DJ is like feeds off the energy and knows when it's time to play.
Absolutely.
Take it up a little bit and get some beat going.
We can feel the energy in the room.
Oh,
we
wow.
can see what's going on. And so the kitchen and the customers interact mm-hmm. so much at Redbird. And part of our, not necessarily struggle, but struggle for lack of a better mm-hmm. term in finding the right space was that I wanted to have a space where I could see people come in the front door. And it's very hard to find that.
Yeah.
But that space that we occupy met all of our needs.
Yeah. Because it's, I mean, open kitchen's not right. that big of a deal anymore. There's
no.
a lot of open kitchens.
Right.
But Redbird, the kitchen is not just open, it's up front.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And then you're on the other side of the line. Like when I've been there, you're on the other side of the line. You're not behind the counter. I see you out plating and doing the, you know, quality control. And you got... Christian, who was at City Pharmacy.
That's right.
I mean, that was quite a steal for you guys. She's quite a talent.
She's great. She's Christian Perez is my chef de cuisine,
mm-hmm.
and so she runs the meat of the daily operations in the kitchen, and she's super tough. She's awesome. It's funny you mentioned seeing me out front plating, because my favorite place to be uh-huh. is actually back inside on the line cooking with the kids.
Really?
Absolutely.
Okay. What's your least favorite place to be?
In the office paying bills.
I should have known that.
Yeah.
Or washing dishes.
I love washing dishes. I do. It's a zen zone, and uh-huh. I could do it for
it's
hours.
It's like mowing your lawn or
it
something.
It really is. Yeah. Yeah. There's something very satisfying about it.
Now, you call your cuisine free-spirited cuisine.
We sure do.
What does that mean?
Free-spirited cuisine to me means that we let the ingredients drive the cooking rather than letting a concept drive the cooking. So a lot of restaurants are concept-based. We're an Italian restaurant or a Spanish restaurant or what have you. And then they revolve all of their dishes around that idea. And we do the other thing at Redbird, which is we take in ingredients and we look at them and we say, what does it want to be? And then we let it be that. And so our goal is to just serve dishes that let ingredients be the best versions of themselves.
So you bring in, say, a lot of okra.
Yeah.
And what happens?
Well, we ask ourselves some questions about okra. What do people like about it? What do people not like about it? In our case, I mean, what's the chief complaint about okra? It's slimy.
Slimy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And all that trouble starts as soon as you cut it open. So we don't cut it. Instead,
yeah.
we blanch it really quickly and we char it on the grill, and it's never cut into. And so it stays sweet and tender on the inside.
Mm-hmm.
And then we add some fat through a kind of buttermilk dressing and fried onions. And all of a sudden you've got mm-hmm. a dish that is a really great version of okra. It's simple. But it really makes people happy.
It makes me very happy.
It makes me very happy. I've had that dish.
I've got a picture of it at my website. It's,
yes.
It's very memorable. And that's a gift, I think. I mean, with vegetables, there's not a lot of restaurants in the city. There's a lot of, you know, protein-forward places
right.
are known for a protein dish. But I would tell, when I tell people about Redbird, I'm like, you can go in and even carnivores get kind of your mind blown from the way I don't know how you curate the vegetables.
Right.
And like you said, like you ask these questions about okra and it becomes this super memorable, craveable dish.
Thank you.
Yeah.
It was always my intention to have a vegetable forward restaurant. I think that as chefs for a long time, we've gotten caught in this trap of ideating dishes by taking a piece of meat mm-hmm. and putting it in the middle of a plate and then putting things around it. But we live in an agricultural area. We've got a great growing season. We've got wonderful people growing vegetables. Why not let that be the star? And so what we do at Redbird is we do the opposite. We look at the vegetables first and let them tell a story. You know, we're moving into winter now, so things are changing. Now it's time to think about things like cabbage. We got a lot of cabbage coming on the market, you know. We buy great mushrooms, amazing mushrooms from local growers, you know, hard squashes, turnips are in season, beets, all the roots, everything is changing now.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're changing along with it. And it's really exciting.
And so, and this is Redbird's really sort of, this is your first solo record. I mean,
yeah.
As a, when you were at Watershed, I think, you know, I think the buzz was that you added a lot of things, you made right. a lot of twists, but you were really cooking off a James Beard award-winning platform that Scott Peacock had done years before.
Mm-hmm.
Are you enjoying being center stage and doing your solo record as much as, I mean, was it everything you thought it would be?
And more. I'm having such an amazing time doing it. I feel like the luckiest guy in the world. I get to wake up every morning, and even when it's hard, which sometimes it's really hard.
Yeah.
But even when it's hard, I still get to go in to my place and do something that I really love to do. And make people happy with food. How much better does it get than that?
And it sounds like you're letting your team have that same free-spiritedness that you are allowing yourself in the kitchen.
I hope so. I give everybody who works in the kitchen the opportunity to have input, bring ideas. We really encourage it. Bring ideas. We may not use them, but we may. You know, or we may build on them. They may morph and change into something else. Mm-hmm. But that's the creative process. That's what we love to do.
And if you need some tasters, you have two yes. right here.
Yes.
I seem to never have too much trouble finding finding help in that
don't.
Respect.
I bet you don't. Okay. Well, what does Christmas dinner look like at Zeb Stevenson's house?
Well, pretty low key this year. It's been quite a ride since we opened the restaurant, mm-hmm. and my circle's pretty small. It's just my girl and I, and Jefe, our dog,
mm-hmm.
and we're gonna keep it really low key. Probably roast a little duck.
Oh,
have
nice.
Some nice vegetables.
I don't call is that.
Yeah, I was
low
looking
key.
At. I'm like, that's not very low key. I thought you were gonna.
We call grilled cheese
right,
low key.
Right. Some instant ramen.
So yeah. We have some differing definitions.
We sure
it,
do.
It appears.
We sure do.
Fair enough.
Fair enough. Okay, we are speaking with Zeb Stevenson with Redbird on the West Side. I want to take a break, and when we come back, I want to talk about your wine. Collection
Excellent.
And list, because you have something very special about that.
Thank you.
While the merry bells keep ringing, may your every wish come true.
And welcome back to Atlanta Living, and I'm your host, Belinda Skelton. Well, we're talking about the great new restaurant that opened up in this year, 2019, Redbird on the West Side. And I have the chef and owner, Zeb Stevenson, in the studio with me, and my foodie correspondent, David Danzig, of the website bitesandsights.net. And I teased about your wine list, mm-hmm. but there is really something special about it.
I'd like to think there is. We feature wines strictly from family-owned operations and small wineries. It's important to us because we feel like we're a family, and we want to support smaller producers. And so we get to pick the producers that offer the wines that we feel goes best with the food. And we taste them, and we put them together, and we think something really magical is happening there.
That's great. Was it hard for you to find those small wineries that were family-owned?
I have pretty deep connections in the wine business mm-hmm. who have been able to help me out with that. If I had to do it all on my own, I'd still be putting the wine list together.
Okay. Now tell us exactly how to find you.
Absolutely. Redbird is in the West Side Provisions District. So that is the district there at the corner of Howell Mill and Huff Road. We are on the inside courtyard. So if you are entering the center from Howell Mill Road, you'll see the entrance to the courtyard in between Little Star and Jenny's Ice Cream. You just head through, and we're on your left before you get to the footbridge.
Now, do you recommend reservations?
I do recommend reservations. We fill up very quickly, and if you're looking for a weekend reservation, Thursday, Friday, Saturday night, you should jump on that pretty early.
Okay. All right. And it's worth it. And
it
you
is.
Serve dinner, lunch, brunch, and sweets, and with a great wine list.
We sure do. And we love doing it.
All right. And your enthusiasm for what you do comes
Happy
through.
Holidays.
Thank you for your passion.
Thank you very much for sharing it with us. Thank you for having me.
David, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
All right. You're listening to Atlanta Living only on 95.5 WSB.
At 95.5 WSB.
This is 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's news and talk. And this is Atlanta, the food, the wine, the entertainment, the lifestyle. This is Belinda Skelton's Atlanta Living.
Brought to you by Marietta Plastic Surgery.
Welcome to Atlanta Living. I'm your host, Belinda Skelton. Well, for this next segment, I want you to pack your bags and get ready to travel because I have the author of 1,000 Places to See Before You Die in the studio, Patricia Schultz. And this is the number one best travel book ever published, Patricia.
Thank you.
The concept has really morphed over the years. You first published this book in 2003, and this is a bucket list book for travelers.
Yeah, actually, the book preceded the whole bucket list notion, and I like to think that maybe it was inspired by the book, although the whole idea of just seeing things in your lifetime is as old as man. I mean, we have one lifetime, and how do you want to fill it? Doing what you love, and in my case, it's always been travel.
You've picked places that are people's must-see list.
Well, they're my must-see list. And I think a lot of the success and the popularity of the book is that it's one voice, it's one person. So there's a certain, you know, continuity. But there's also a great mix because that's how I love to travel. I love to see, you know, the iconic, well-known, even cliche almost type of places, but then the totally unsung, on like way off the beaten path and everything in between. And that's why there's something of interest for everybody, because I love culture, I love music and history, and I love natural beauty and man-made, you know, so it's all there.
So as we were walking through the radio station, I introduced you to some salespeople, and they were saying, oh, I have that book, and they're talking about the book that came out in 2003. Well, they're going to have their socks knocked off when they see the book that's on the shelves right now that just came out.
Yeah, this is so. Apparently, I've been told that they're not really called coffee table books anymore, and I don't know why, because, you know, does America not have coffee tables anymore? But it's a big, oversized, deluxe, heavy, gorgeous deluxe edition that's, you know, just come out now. And it's the same 1,000 places, but instead of small kind of postage stamp size photos in color, this is big, lush, double spread, you know, places that, you know, the old expression that a photo's worth 1,000 words.
Yeah.
So now they just have captions to tell you what you're looking at, but it's really all in the photo itself.
All of the material in this book is 100% new.
The photos, yeah.
The photos
all
are
brand new, yeah. I waded through, umpteen trillion photos to find the first, the best photo that kind of expressed best the place in mind. But yeah, none of these photos were in the original book, which was a real thick tome kind of book with all of the information about how to and when to and why and the history and the backstory and the best time to go. But this book is just all visual. And maybe I would say influenced by the whole Instagrammableness of the world
these days.
But we've always been, you know, attracted. Our attention has always been grabbed by visuals, especially when they're just utterly beautiful. And that's what this book is times 1,000.
Do you have a favorite photograph from this book? Of the 1,000 photographs in this book, do you have a favorite that kind of comes to your mind?
No. Because
it's like your
my
child.
Short list, exactly. Or it's like having 5 children and being asked what your favorite 4 are, because each one is, you know, quite different as the destination is different. You know, you have medieval castles, you have national parks, you have waterfalls and islands, and you have contemporary architecture, and then an old Renaissance palazzo. So it's, you know, each one has its own beauty. And that's the beauty of travel and the beauty of the world, that the possibility possibilities. You know that wonderful expression, there's an embarrassment of possibilities. Well, that's what this is.
What is the key to your travels that makes it so comfortable?
You know, your expectations or, your expectations, when they're too high, you set yourself up for disappointments. And it's very easily, it very easily happens that you're disappointed with travel because you go expecting something and find it's quite different. I find when it's quite different from what I expected, that's exciting to me. And there's also a wonderful expression by Aldous Huxley that goes, to travel is to discover that everyone is wrong about other places. So I do a lot of research. I mean, I hardly go in blindly, and I don't want to go unprepared. You know, you save up with your time and money to go to these places, mm-hmm. whether it's, you know, Orlando or the Masai Mara, and you don't want to, you know, walk past the important stuff. You want to be prepared to know what you're seeing. But at the same time, I leave myself open, you know, hopefully for, you don't want to be too structured. You
right.
want to be, they say that serendipity is the best travel guide. So I like to leave myself open to unexpected things as well. But there's also another lovely notion about how, you know, the more grateful and appreciative you are, the more beauty you see in things. So I like to think that what I walk away with is a real appreciation for what I've just experienced. And then you go home, too. It's a win-win situation because you go home and you have a different respect and appreciation for what we have here in America. So it's, you know, there's no downside to travel, I think.
Is there something that you collect from each city?
Well, that's funny because in my innocence, in my 20s, when I was first starting to really travel a lot after university, I thought I need a collection. I need to make all of this, you know, something
right.
physical that I can bring back to remember until, you know, when I'm 101. So I started with something very practical and I started collecting carpets.
Oh, you did? Patricia.
I know, because I thought, well, sure, okay, they'd look nice in an apartment, a New York City apartment, which is very limited in
and
space.
And small.
Yes, and inexpensive and easy to carry.
Right.
You know, just something you can fit in the corner of your suitcase. So I soon ran out of floor space.
I bet.
And then I put one or two up on the walls, and that was no easy feat. So, yeah, now I switched to Christmas tree ornaments.
Mm-hmm.
And I now have 5 Christmas trees
oh my goodness.
To accommodate. I mean, 1 proper sized tree
yeah.
and then 3 or 4 small ones. And I thought, yeah, I think I have enough. So, and really, you don't need stuff. You
right.
know, you want to bring your souvenirs, your mementos home in your head and not in your suitcase. So, yeah, I've abandoned the whole collection thing.
I've got a thing for rocks, and I collect a rock from every location that I visit. And I write on the bottom of the rock where this is from. And I have a big bowl full of rocks.
That's lovely, though, actually.
I don't know what it
That's
is.
That's a nice idea, as long as they're not like big boulder-sized
no.
stones.
I'm sure TSA is, why are your bags full of rocks?
That's
is there
funny.
Something that you do when you go to these towns, villages, cities? First thing that you do?
Well, you know, I have a very unofficial schedule, which is that depending upon where I go and what kind of time zone change, you know, time difference there is, and when I arrive, if I arrive early in the day and the hotel room is available, which is not always the
right.
case, especially if they're smaller hotels, which I prefer, then you need to kind of get up and out and wander. And sometimes I see the cities as it's awakening. Then your hotel is ready. I take a nap so that I can make it through until 10 or 11 o'clock mm-hmm. at night and then just crash. If I arrive later in the day, late afternoon, and the hotel room is available, then I kind of shower, have something to eat, and I'm in bed by 9 or 10. And then the next day, I just hit the ground running. But I generally like to just wander. You know, I put the GPS away, the map away. I always have a card with the hotel name in case I forget where I am or if I've just arrived or if it's an address I can't pronounce. But I like to wander and I like to imagine that I'm a local, which of course people see you at 50 paces and they know you're not. But I like to wander. I think it's, you know, the best way to see a city and to happen upon corners and neighborhoods and the local markets. I love local markets. They're always a real window to the local culture and people. And I like to keep it local. But then I like to see all the attractions, you know, the museums and the don't miss kind of places.
So,
and food.
Yes, and the food. and immerse yourself in the local cuisine. This time of year being close to the holidays, do you have a favorite place to visit?
I think a wonderful thing to do, and especially wonderful for two generations, and I saw a lot of three generations, are those great river cruises in Europe, because the Christmas markets in Europe are just unrivaled. Yeah. Now in the States, we have them everywhere. Do you have them in Atlanta,
markets? No.
Oh, because New York has really embraced them.
Yeah,
and I've seen them in Toronto has an incredible one, and there are great ones in Chicago, but there's just nothing like the old European markets. They go back to the 15th, 16th century, so they really know their way around Christmas markets. And these river cruises on the Danube, and also on the Rhine. Stop, you know, every day there's a different city and a different Christmas market. And I thought, oh, how many Christmas markets can I see? But the cities themselves are just a joy to explore. And the whole entire city is decorated and ready for the holidays. And it's great for older, like to bring your parents, maybe if they're not so mobile. And it's a great way to have family time during the holidays as well. And that's why I mentioned three generations. There aren't that many things that are practical for 20-something kids and their 70, 80-something grandparents. So, and it's just a lovely, the whole river cruise market has just exploded over the last 10 years, I'd say, 5 to 10 years. So popular now.
Do you ever take guided tours or do you like to do things on your own?
Very much both. And it depends on where you're going. I was, so people, I'll interview myself. What is the country that astonished you the most? And that was Iran. People don't normally have it on their short list. But the reason I bring that up is because some countries you have to be part of a group with Iran. But I don't know that I would visit Iran not part of a group.
Right.
Because our guide was, I mean, I wanted to marry him and bring him home. He was just remarkable. And it's a country, you know, where there's some language barrier, although all of the young people speak English and everybody loved Americans. Who would have thought?
Yeah.
So I do take guided tours or escorted vacations, they're also called, because it's a real luxury to just show up in the lobby every morning at 8 or 9 and to know that your day is going to be filled with some of the most incredible sights and experiences and still be able to exchange and, you know, interact with the local people. And then other times, maybe I'm inclined to just go solo and independently and just do my own.
We're talking with Patricia Schultz, the author of 1,000 Places to See Before You Die, The World as You've Never Seen It Before. We're going to take a break. When we come back, more questions for Patricia about the bucket list travel. You're listening to Atlanta Living only on 95.5 WSB.
Now back to Belinda Skelton and Atlanta Living on 95.5 WSB, Atlanta's news and talk.
Welcome back to Atlanta Living. I'm your host, Belinda Skelton. Well, I hope you've got the travel bug now listening to Patricia Schultz talk about her new book, 1,000 Places to See Before You Die. Because we've been talking about her book, the new deluxe edition of the 2003 book, 1,000 Places Before You Die. Now, Patricia, I'm going to ask you, what is your favorite? Because people have limited vacation.
I know. And money.
And money.
It's money and time, and it's time and money. If you've got a lot of one and none of the other and vice versa. So, okay. Impossible question to answer,
but
here I go. So in the U.S., you know, if you want to go locally or domestically, because only 35% of Americans have passports.
Oh, wow.
So, and there's so much to see here.
Right.
I mean, imagine. So I love the Northeast, especially now during the autumn time.
Oh, yeah.
And I live in New York, so it's easy and accessible for us. I also love the Southwest, the Four Corners area, Utah, Colorado, New Mexico. And I love the California coastline. And then to continue north along Oregon is just as beautiful. And then the Pacific Northwest, Washington, the San Juan Islands. So there's a lot here. And then, of course, there's Canada. But to go really remote and far, you know, if you want to do something that's the kind of, oh, my gosh, once in a lifetime,
bucket
really.
List, yeah, blowout.
Yeah, like it's your 50th or you won the lottery or you've just retired and there's the world to see. Antarctica is something that's just out of this world. Yeah, I didn't think I'd love it as much as I did. And they had to kind of, you know, drag me off the
ground.
Well, you know, it's flip season. So you want to go when it's our winter time.
Okay.
And we went during Thanksgiving, in fact, and it was so warm, climate change, it was so moderate that for Thanksgiving dinner, we had it on the deck. It was the high 40s. You know, we ate turkey legs with our gloves on, but still. And so Antarctica really is another world.
Okay.
And it's quite spectacular. And Italy is my all-time favorite. I could just go back time and again. I think it's one of the most revisited countries anywhere. And it's understandable why. And can you get a bad meal?
Right.
And also Southeast Asia. I love Vietnam, Cambodia, Myanmar, that whole area. Very gracious, lovely. They share a lot of heritage and history, and yet each country is quite different and very welcoming, very hospitable. And Africa. You know, the whole African safari thing, I think, is just needs to be on your list. Because, you know, as a New Yorker, I thought, really, do I need to spend that kind of time and money to go sleep in a tent? But it's a kind of pinch me experience, you know, that until you get there. And I've since been back many times. Once you go once, you'll return time and again.
Thank you so much for joining us in the studio. This is the perfect gift for anyone.
Yes, whether you're well traveled or not.
Right. You can travel through the pages or you can actually book your ticket.
Yes, it's great for inspiration.
And it's 1,000 Places to See Before You Die, the deluxe edition, The World as You've Never Seen It Before by Patricia Schultz, number one travel book ever. So, Patricia, happy travels.
Thank you so much. Thanks very much, Belinda.
You've been listening to Atlanta Living only on 95.5 WSB.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.